This is All Things Considered on Rhode Island Public Radio, Rhode Island's NPR. Well, the news has come out that the Dallas-based owner of the Providence Journal is putting the newspaper up for sale. Like other papers, the Journal has wrestled with shrinking circulation and ad revenues for many years. And joining us now to talk about a possible sale of the Projo and what that means, Rhode Island Public Radio's Ian Donis and Scott McKay. Welcome to both of you.
Hello, Dave.
Let's start out with Ian. Why is the Belo Company out of Dallas putting the Journal up for sale now?
Well, Dave, this is clearly a business decision. For a long time, Belo liked to operate the Journal, and it offered a pretty healthy return. The landscape for newspapers has gotten tougher and tougher over times. Over the years, Belo acquired the Providence Journal in the mid to late 90s, when newspapers still had very large profit margins. You could say the company has suffered from poor timing in how the threat to old-line newspapers, the internet, really has ramped up, particularly since 2000, and the online ads of newspapers are nowhere nearly as profitable as the print advertising. We've seen the Journal's journalistic resources be run down. And Belo really has not put money into reinvesting into the newspaper. We've not seen the hiring of young reporters. The former reporter intern program that used to introduce more young reporters into the newspaper was eliminated some years ago. So now you see a staff that's a little more top-heavy on veterans.
Editors are gone. Copy editors are gone. The people who made the story in the background are gone.
Yes, many to quite a degree.
Now, Scott, of course, you worked at the Projo for many years as a writer. Is it certain that Belo will be able to find a buyer? Because this sale announcement is a little hazy. What happens if it can't find a buyer?
Well, if it can't find a buyer, then Belo, at least in the short term, is stuck with the paper. And what that probably means, unfortunately, is more belt tightening, more cuts in employees.
Ian, what do you need to do to improve the financial outlook for the Journal?
Well, Dave, there are no perfect answers, but I think the Journal could do well by going back to the future. Under the leadership of one of its former executive editors, Joel Rawson, the Journal really went on a tremendous run of journalism in the 80s when they tried having a must-read article in the Sunday paper every week, the kind of thing that would set the whole state to talking. And even with the challenge facing newspapers these days, Rhode Island remains a great place to do journalism. We turn up a lot of great stories here at Rhode Island Public Radio, as do our peers and counterparts at other media organizations. And I think you just have to get the stories out there, the public interest reporting that makes people sit up on the edge of their seat and read it with great interest.
The other problem, I think, is the decline in coverage of local news. You can almost track this huge plunge in circulation to the Journal closing all of their local bureaus. There's no more East Bay Edition, no more West Bay, no more Blackstone Valley, no more Northwest. And people in Rhode Island got so used to the Journal being setting the daily agenda, both at the State House, they had a four-person Washington bureau, and in their towns, they used to cover everything that moved, the town councils. They did feature stories on what's going on around town, the chicken dinners. They printed everybody's divorces. I mean, this was an incredible paper where they had a 4 or 5 person Washington bureau. And yet, with these zoned editions, they acted like everyone's weekly. Covered the little leagues, covered the high school sports scene, covered the town councils, covered the school committees. And that evaporated once they closed the bureau and did all these cutbacks.
Yeah, and it might be tough to have that kind of comprehensive coverage, but I think you can still find really fascinating, intriguing stories from the different corners of the state so that there's a reason for people in Westerly or Woonsocket, West Warwick, or wherever to buy the paper and read it online.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the problem is, though, you do need people to cover the stories, and there have been so many cutbacks on the side of reporters and editors, and there's still some very good people there who do some very, very good journalism, but there's not as many as there used to be, and as you mentioned, Ian, there's not a lot of young people coming through that pipeline. It's very old staff. It's not nearly as diverse as the state of Rhode Island is, and I think that's a problem.
Ian and Scott, I'll throw this one out. Does it make a difference in who owns the Projo, local ownership, distant ownership?
Well, of course. I mean, leadership starts at the top, and you see all kinds of news organizations out there, from the Journal Register company that ran down the Pawtucket Times, which was once a much better staff paper. And you have some newspaper groups that are much better. You could have a local person come in who views it as a charitable trust, much like the Metcalf family that owned the Journal before its sale to Belo. And the ownership has a large importance on how things play out.
Obviously, the Texas ownership did not work out well in the past 10 years. I would argue initially it was pretty good, but once the revenue started to go, the Journal became really just an ATM machine for people in Texas. I think if the Providence Newspaper Guild, the union that represents most of the employees, is smart, they'll link up with perhaps a newspaper, a broker, and financial advisor, and maybe try to get some local ownership, put together a group, make it an employee-owned institution, and that might work. The worst thing, I think, would be for, a Gannett or another one of these faltering chains to come in here, grab it for the cash flow, and continue to squeeze more juice out of an orange that is basically almost pulp.
Well, then reporting resources would be cut even more, I assume, by that. And how would that, you think, either of you, affect the politics and civic life?
Well, the Journal has traditionally played an important watchdog role in Rhode Island. It's helped to provide fodder, in some cases, for federal prosecutors. And I think you can't understate the importance of a vigorous media. And there are other elements in the media landscape in Rhode Island who play an important role, and I'll include us in that and many others. But I think a statewide daily has kind of a unique role, and it's you hope that it can remain somewhat robust.
Scott. Yeah, I mean, our generation really felt that. I mean, I grew up on this paper. I worked there for nearly a quarter of a century. They used to have not only the premier political coverage in the state, but they also had very vigorous things like a book page, their own movie reviewer. They had theater coverage that was more extensive than it is now. A very robust feature coverage. And now there's just a lot of wire copy from like everywhere, all over the paper, because they don't have enough local people to fill it. They've cut back on photojournalism. But yes, I do think that it is very important for Rhode Island civic culture. Now, a new generation, which apparently doesn't read the paper very much, the demographics of both the readers and the people who produce it are fairly old, that maybe the internet is going to step in. There'll be some new iteration of this. But right now, there would be a huge void if the Journal, say, cut back to 3 days a week, which some of the larger papers have done when they've been under financial pressure, such as Cleveland and Detroit and New Orleans.
Okay, we'll wrap this up and, of course, stay on top of this story involving the proposed sale of the Providence Journal. Ian Donis, Scott McKay, thanks for bringing us up to speed.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
This is Rhode Island Public Radio, Rhode Island's NPR.